same night what had just happened. She knew. But in the disciplinary hearing, right after Becker denied everything, Maisie did too. She said that she saw nothing, and I told her nothing.
She lied? Said Ellen, who never lied. Why?
She was protecting herself, of course. I don't think you realize how influential Paul Becker is. He's not only chief of neurosurgery, he has a brilliant international reputation, and he's the best surgeon I ever saw, a rock star. Last week, I watched him tease out a glioblastoma multiforme with no clean surgical plane, one that no one else could have so much as debulked, let alone never touched the brain tissue.
I don't care. He's an asshole. He tried to rape you.
I don't think it would have gone that far. He was just getting some cheap and drunken gropes. Although you're right. That's enough to make him an asshole.
Caro tried to smile. A failure.
If I'd actually been raped, I'd at least have physical DNA evidence.
You shouldn't need it. You should go to the cops and file charges.
I'm not going to do that. I'd lose, just like I lost at the hearing. He said, she said. But maybe. Maybe at least the hospital might watch him more carefully now.
The server brought the iced teas. Ellen said, and two scotches, please. Neat. This time, Caro didn't object. After the server left, Ellen blurted,
Sissy, why aren't you angry? Why aren't you furious?
I am furious.
She leaned across the table toward Ellen.
But I can't show it. Not at the hospital. You don't understand. I've trained myself not to. In the operating room, you can't show emotion.
And a whole lot of good that had done her. But she wasn't going to say, not even to Ellen, that in the operating room, Caro thought of herself like a fighter pilot. Control was a necessity. Steadiness, calm, unflustered detachment. But saying that aloud sounded grandiose. Possibly even ridiculous. Besides, there was never any point in trying to convince Ellen to value calm. Caro plunged into the rest of the mess.
This means that after my boards, I can say goodbye to my chances of getting hired at Fairly. It just won't happen, and there are no...
But you're a rock star, too. You told me that your evaluations, or whatever they are...
Yes, but...
And your research? You did that brain mapping thing that even got published in...
Listen to me. I need you to listen. I'm good. Yes. Very good.
Caroline is so full of herself. I cannot teach that child humility. Caro continued. That's part of the problem. Because I'm cross-trained in both neurosurgery and research, and have done both, the only place I can work would want to work, is a big hospital that runs clinical trials of new neurological developments. And there are no other hospitals like that in this city, or in this state.
I see, Ellen said.
They sat in silence until the scotches came. Ellen drank half of hers.
It's not fair, Caro.
No, it's not.
Which was why she'd thought that these doctors that she'd worked with, learned from, admired, would believe her.
At the end of the hearing, Caro had looked at Dr. Barella, the only other woman in the room besides the treacherous Maisie, and Vera Barella had dropped her gaze to the polished conference table and not raised it again. Caro had been naive. No, it had gone deeper than that. The doctors at her hearing were faced daily with profound unfairness. The child who comes down with leukemia. The young father of three, whose benign meningioma grows not in the pia mater of the right frontal lobe, where it would be easy to remove, but on the brainstem, where it destroys nerves and paralyzes him. The experimental drug that helps patients A, B, and C, but unaccountably kills D. Somehow, Caro had expected that physicians who experienced this profound unfairness every day would try to compensate with greater justice in their dealings with each other. The hospital's self-interest meant it hadn't worked like that. Or, looked at another way, it hadn't worked like that because, faced with Becker's denials, the others at the hearing had no evidence to go on, nothing tangible. He said, she said. A sudden, profound sense of loss swept through Caro. If only she'd left the party earlier. If coats and sweaters had not been left upstairs. If she hadn't bantered the last few weeks with Paul Becker. A banter which she'd seen as collegial friendliness. A relaxing of rank because after her boards, she would be his full colleague. And which he'd apparently interpreted as an invitation. If only just one thing of many had been different. But no, only a single if only mattered here. And Ellen startled Caro by voicing it. If only he wasn't such an asshole, Ellen said. Because that's what you were thinking, isn't it, Sissy? That this mess is somehow your fault? Because you're supposed to be able to control everything? You can't. Caro was silent. If Ellen had known anything about neurosurgery, she wouldn't say that. Caro understood completely how many things she could not control. Inoperable spinal injuries. Glioblastoma multiforme, impossible to remove completely. Arterial aneurysms that burst in the ambulance on the way to the ER. The difference between Caro and Ellen was that Caro fought to control each of them and counted it as a personal failure when she could not. Whereas Ellen, from some mysterious mixture of courage and fatalism, accepted whatever life threw at her. Caro said, "How's Angelica?" "The same." Angelica would always be the same, until one day she wasn't anything and no longer defined Ellen's life and the life of her other daughter, Kayla. They were all the family that Caro had, and she would do anything for them. Although that's what she thought she'd been doing, and now she'd screwed up. "I'll miss you," Ellen said. "Because, of course, you have to move where you can do your best work. My sister, the hotshot Sawbones." Despite herself, Caro laughed. Nobody says Sawbones anymore. "Skull Wizard. Brain Editor. Gray Matter Cowboy. Where do you get these terms?" Ellen smiled mysteriously. Then she grew serious. "I can manage, Caro. I will miss you, dreadfully. But I can manage. I know." Her sister managed, better than nearly anyone else could have done in her situation. But with a good salary someplace else, Caro could still send Ellen money. Ellen needed it. Social services provided inadequate help for Angelica. Kayla outgrew her clothes as fast as Ellen could get them from Goodwill. And nobody, including his parole officer, had received word or money from Ellen's deadbeat husband in over a year. But what Ellen needed, at least as much as money, was adult companionship to relieve her terrible daily routine. And so few people besides Caro could stand to be in the house with Angelica. Ellen said, "Where will you apply for a job?" "Don't know yet. I have to start looking. Boards are next month. Well, right now, I have to go to the ladies." Alone, Caro pushed away her defeatist thoughts. After all, she sliced into thought every time she sent a microscope or a knife or a laser beam through the soft gray jelly of a living brain, cutting through memories, through perceptions, through capabilities to move and speak and think. All as fragile as snowflakes, easily dissolved in a slip of the knife, a tear of a nerve. Thoughts changed nothing, only actions did. The party had happened. The hearing had happened. Both lay in the unrecoverable past, and now Caro would go forward, to a different city, a different life from the one she wanted, and she would travel back as often as she could to see Ellen and the kids, She could do this. She always had. The worst was over. Ellen had left the second half of her scotch undrunk. Caro hadn't touched hers. While Ellen was in the restroom, Caro got up from the booth, found the server, and paid for the liquor and iced tea so Ellen wouldn't have to. Then she pulled Ellen's purse toward her, fished around until she found the parking ticket, and stuck it in her pocket before Ellen could realize the ticket was gone.